Ballhawks.
Hey, I'm just here, so I won't get fined.
Hey und herzlich willkommen zu einer Sonderfolge des offiziellen Podcasts der German Seahawkers.
So y'all can sit here and ask me all the questions y'all want to. I'm going to answer with the same answer, so y'all can shoot if y'all please.
Ein saftiges Servus, Grüezi und Hallo zu einer weiteren Folge Ballhawks, dem offiziellen Podcast der German Seahawkers. Mein Name ist Jonas und wenn ich mich etwas komisch anhöre heute, dann bitte ich das zu entschuldigen. Ich bin etwas erkältet, es ist schon deutlich besser geworden, aber ich werde euch jetzt hier durch diese Sonderfolge führen, denn wie ihr sicher alle wisst, haben die Seahawks den Super Bowl gewonnen. Große News. Und die Jungs, Max, Henry und Tobi haben schon drüber gesprochen, aber ich habe mir heute nochmal zwei Gäste von unseren Freunden der UK Seahawkers eingeladen, sprich wir werden gleich nochmal ins Englische switchen nach den Seahawks News. Und wir wollen natürlich auch nochmal drüber sprechen, weil dieses Ereignis muss auch nochmal anderthalb Wochen nach dem fantastischen Spiel gegen die Patriots gefeiert werden. Bevor wir das aber machen, gehen wir nochmal in die Seahawks News rein, weil seit letzter Woche hat sich doch einiges getan.
Frisch aus dem Lockerroom unsere Seahawks News.
Zum einen hatte sich natürlich angekündigt, dass die Seahawks sich einen neuen Offensive Coordinator suchen müssen, weil Clint Kubiak ist tatsächlich, ich glaube ungefähr einen Tag nach dem Super Bowl-Sieg der Seahawks bei den Las Vegas Raiders als Head Coach vorgestellt worden. Und er hat auch noch zwei Trainer mitgenommen. Das zum einen Quarterback-Coach Andrew Janoco, der ist jetzt der neue Raiders Offensive Coordinator. Und auch Run-Game-Coordinator Rick Dennison, der schon eine lange Verbindung zur Familie Kubiak hatte, unter anderem auch zu Clint Kubiaks Vater Gary und unter dem schon Trainer war. Und der ist jetzt auch bei den Raiders. Die Seahawks mussten also reagieren, wenn sie gut in die Saison starten wollen und haben tatsächlich wenige Tage nach der fantastischen Super Bowl-Parade in Seattle mit über 1 Million Besuchern vor einigen Tagen auch einen neuen Offensive Coordinator vorgestellt. Und das ist erstaunlicherweise kein Trainer aus dem internen Staff, sondern tatsächlich ein Trainer von außen. Und zwar Brian Flurry, der ehemalige Tight Ends Coach und Run Game Coordinator der San Francisco 49ers. Da haben die Seahawks also bei den 49ers ein bisschen gewildert im Coaching Staff. Nur nochmal so eine kleine Zusammenfassung. Eine größere Zusammenfassung wird es in den kommenden Tagen bei uns auf der Homepage geben. Die hat der liebe Thomas geschrieben. Also auch da nochmal die Augen offen halten. Werden wir auch nochmal über unsere Social Media Kanäle verbreiten. Genau, Brian Flurry hat noch nie Plays gecallt, hat aber schon seit 2019 unter Kyle Shanahan bei den 49ers gearbeitet. Erstaunlicherweise hat er als Defensive Quality Control Coach angefangen, also war gar nicht auf der offensiven Seite des Balles, sondern hat dann gewechselt und war jetzt eben Tight Ends Coach der 49ers. Unter anderem hat er wie heißt er denn nochmal? George Kittle, meine Güte, die Erkältung schlägt bei mir so ein bisschen rein, gecoacht. Der hat sich auch schon traurig gezeigt, dass Flurry weg ist. Der ist jetzt also der neue OC. Und dann gibt es noch mehrere Coaching-News. Die Seahawks haben nämlich noch zwei Coaches von den Baltimore Ravens geholt. Unter anderem den ehemaligen Defensive Coordinator der Ravens, Zach Orr. Das war der Nachfolger von Mike McDonald in Baltimore. Der ist jetzt der neue Linebacker-Coach. Und den Analysten Daniel Stern, der ist ehemals von den Ravens, der wird jetzt nach dem Abgang von Andrew Janoco wahrscheinlich der neue Quarterback-Coach der Seahawks, weil der hat bei den Ravens auch schon viel mit Lamar Jackson zusammengearbeitet. Sehr junger Typ, auch sehr Analytics getrieben, also geht viel in die Richtung, in die Mike McDonald auch gehen will. Und ja, genau. Noch eine kleine Anmerkung zum Thema Coaches. Clint Kubiak nimmt tatsächlich nicht den ganzen offensiven Staff mit. O-Line-Coach John Benton bleibt auf jeden Fall in Seattle. Der hat auch schon bei den Niners unter Brian Flurry gearbeitet. Running-Backs-Coach Justin Outen wird wohl auch höchstwahrscheinlich in Seattle bleiben. Also da sind wenige wichtige Positionen besetzt. Und dann gibt es spielerseitig bisher noch keine großen Vertragsnews. Da gehen wir vielleicht gleich auch im Gespräch mit Mitch und Josh mal drauf ein. Wichtig ist auf jeden Fall zu wissen, dass die Seahawks nicht den Franchise-Tag für Running Back Ken Walker nutzen werden. Und ja, Cornerback Greg Woolen hat auf Social Media schon dieses Will Smith Prince of Bel-Air Abschiedsmeme gepostet. Also da scheint es auch so zu sein, dass er die Seahawks verlassen wird. Und dann noch eine News, wir nehmen heute am Donnerstag auf, die am Mittwoch reingekommen ist. Das jetzt auch nochmal offiziell bestätigt. Die Seahawks stehen offiziell zum Verkauf. Das hat der Paul Allen Trust am Mittwoch bekannt gegeben. Und ja, das kann es sogar sein, wir gehen da jetzt nicht groß drauf ein, weil das ein sehr komplexes Thema ist, dass der Verkauf der Seahawks teilweise vielleicht schon zum Saisonstart durch ist oder im Laufe der Saison durchgeht. Weil wenn man mal auf die letzten drei Verkäufe von Franchises in der NFL schaut, das waren die Panthers, die Broncos und die Commanders, dann hat das zwischen der Ankündigung und der Unterschrift zwischen 6 und 9 Monaten gedauert, bis die Teams verkauft waren. Und das würde ungefähr in den Bereich des Saisonstarts passen. Bevor wir jetzt aber in die nochmalige Super Bowl Recap gehen, haben wir ein kleines besonderes Intro, was sich auf die Folge unseres Podcasts bezieht. Und lasst euch überraschen, wir sprechen uns auf der anderen Seite und dann auf Englisch.
Touchdown, Seahawks!
Competition Wednesday, das Thema der Woche.
Say your prayers, little one, don't forget my son, to include everyone. Tuck you in, warm within, keep you free from sin, till the Sandman he comes. Oh, God, that was like doing karaoke back in Fallenbossel.
Yeah, but great intro, mate. For anyone who is wondering why we did that, the title of this episode is in honor of Sam Darnold. It's called Enter Sandman. And due to licensing issues, we actually weren't able to play the original song by Metallica, which is obviously Enter Sandman. So,
wait,
Josh,
no,
of the 12 Top...
That wasn't a recording?
That wasn't James Hetfield.
No. That wasn't actually James Hetfield. This was Josh from the 12 Talk podcast. And thank you very much for doing it. Big fan. And also, welcome to the pod. And not only is Josh here, but Mitch is here as well. Welcome, guys.
Thanks for having us on, mate. I think that's the first and probably the last time I'll ever be asked to do a musical introduction to a podcast. Thanks for letting me do that.
Yeah,
I feel like I got it off my chest there.
Yeah. Maybe you we talked about it in the beforehand. Like speaking of rebrands, because we're kind of thinking about one as well. So maybe if we do a bit of a like new jingles and stuff, we might have to ask your permission to
can't
add you on
me,
there.
No. I want royalties.
Awesome. Yeah, like dear listeners, you all hear it. There's actually a really good mood here. Because, the Seahawks won the Super Bowl. Everybody knows that. And, a week removed from the parade, has it sunk in yet? Or is it still a bit unreal? I don't... Mitch, maybe you can start us off.
Yeah, I think it has now fully sunk in. It's funny, isn't it, in sports? You can feel like something hasn't happened to your team or your franchise for a long time. And you desire it, and when it arrives, it can quite quickly switch from elation to wonder in terms of how much better can this get? Will we be better next year? Will we win it again next year? Is this the start of a dynasty? Is this repeatable? Will other teams do what we're doing here? Will our division improve? There's so many questions that have come about from that joy. It's sunk in. I am enjoying it. I've been rewatching the game and the highlights. And my feed on all of my social media is every other video is something that's from that game or the season. And it's amazing.
Yeah. Josh, how about you? You're nodding?
I'm slightly less English and dour about it than Mitch. Looking onto can we do it again? I'm just reveling in this. I'm absolutely loving it. It's something that I don't think we all saw coming this season. We're all overjoyed by it, and it just like Mitch, I've been rewatching the highlights. I've been doing some work in my office, having it on in the background, just because I can be like, oh, I know what happens here. This is amazing. It's sunk in, but I'm still wondering if it's sunk in for the rest of the league, what this might have started with Seattle.
Yeah, definitely. It's for me, obviously, it was like watching the game. I was thinking about it before, and okay, how am I going to react? Like, am I going to cry? Because it was the first time, like, obviously there was 2013 season, they won it in 2014 when I became a fan. So I was able to soak it up more, to like enjoy it more. It meant more to me, and I was thinking, am I about to cry? But as I sat there and this whole thing unfolded, I'm obviously very anxious. We're gonna talk about it in a little bit. And after it was finished, I was kind of like a bit of like Mike McDonald. When you see the mic'd up, he just said, "Yeah, we just won the Super Bowl." And it was probably for me it was the same. I was sitting there and thought to myself, "Yeah, they won the Super Bowl." I didn't know how to react. I don't know how you guys were.
I've seen the Seahawks in all four Super Bowls now. First one. It was heartbreaking to lose against the Steelers. Second one, obviously, we won it. The third one, I can't put into words how gut-wrenching that was, especially by the fact I've made my way into London to watch it with full expectation. And this one, being surrounded by, we'll talk about obviously where we watched it a little bit later on, but being surrounded by people, obviously being next to Mitch, and it was pure elation. It was amazing. What a feeling. And it's because it was so unexpected as well. I think everyone has sort of said we didn't expect to be there this year.
Yep.
And for us to get to the big dance and for that to be the outcome, just pure domination, like it was, it was amazing. I did what I said I'd do on the pod. I went and hugged as many people as possible.
Awesome.
There was no personal space.
Yeah. I don't know about you guys, but it actually, you talked about the Super Bowl loss against the Patriots. I haven't been able to watch that effing Malcolm Butler interception for years because it was too much pain. Yeah. I'm able to watch it now, and I'm thinking, okay,
don't care.
No biggie here. Yeah.
Exactly the same. I actually don't know how you feel about it, but now if anyone mentions it, or I see it comes up on my social media feed, and I'm just like, I'll watch it all the way through and be like, well, that was a silly play call, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Never mind. That was the, that was the spark. That was the catalyst for us to completely move away from it all, for people to decide to move on and for this new era of Seahawks football to begin. So,
yeah.
Well, the greatest script writers, TV show creators, film, directors, they always make you feel a bit of jeopardy before that final crescendo that feels incredible. And my outlook is just that was the pain we had to endure to truly relish the success that we felt and the elation we felt in that moment. And it probably added 20 or 30% more enjoyment to the moment when the game ended and the confetti fell and the players, and their families and the coaches. It added so much more to that moment that we had come so close and thrown it away against the exact same team all those years ago. So it was necessary pain for all of that joy for me.
Definitely. before that joy came, obviously there were a lot of thoughts going into the game. Like the Seahawks, I just looked it up today. They really did run the table in the end. From week 11 on, the four interception game from Sam against the Rams, they won their last 10 games, including the Super Bowl. So there were a lot of people who thought, oh yeah, the team's so dominant, the defense so dominant that they're gonna do it. But for me personally, there was a lot of anxiety. Like I wasn't, I lived through too much heartbreak over the last couple of years in sports anyway to go, yeah, to go into the game like that and saying, yeah, all right, they got it. So how did you guys think about it before kickoff?
I was relaxed, honestly. I was quite relaxed. And I'm sorry that you had to suffer all that anxiety, Jonas, but for me, I always felt we had a bit too much for them in every capacity. And I've never felt so, I don't want to say confident, because it wasn't like I knew the result before it happened, but I certainly felt like we had too much for them to not be in the game and capable of winning it in the fourth quarter, no matter how the game had gone. It just so happened we put boot to throat in the first quarter and, took almost complete control of that game. And they only really scored points when they got desperate and had to take more shots and really test us, with risky, throws and throwing caution to the wind. So what I expected ended up being the case. I'm not Josh Radamus. I didn't basically completely guess the score before the game.
I didn't completely get it. I was 2 points off.
Yeah, you were just a safety away. How many safeties have there been in Super Bowls throughout history? Give me that stat.
Yeah, but no, yeah. One, obviously, in 2014.
I remember it well.
Yeah. After 12 seconds.
Yeah. That was the missed snap, wasn't it?
Over Peyton Manning's head, yeah.
Over Manning's head, yeah.
Yeah.
Classic.
And me, as Mitch said, I guess a score at 31-13. I was pretty confident on that. I've been on multiple of the podcasts who have asked me the score and got the little snigger from other people when I said 31-13. Like Mitch said, I wasn't cocky with it. I was confident. Looking at how we'd progressed, how we'd had such a dominant playoff, well, a dominant sort of latter half of the season with those 10 wins. You look at how we just dispatched the 49ers and won against the Rams, who, in my opinion, were the real Super Bowl, Super Bowl sort of team there with us. I wasn't worried. I was okay. Trying to talk up on every single podcast, they could get us here, they're good here, they had nothing.
Yeah.
Like we were leagues apart. I thought Milton Williams may have caused us some problems.
Yeah.
The only sack he got was against Bradford. And that was one mess up that Bradford had. I thought Gonzalez played a great game shadowing JSN. But then I was looking at the rest and I was like, receiving wise, Stephon Diggs ain't who he used to be.
Yeah.
Drake May is playing behind a majority rookie O-line. I was just like, I couldn't say anything where they've got us. And I appeared on the Patriots UK podcast.
Yeah.
And I was trying to be really, really amicable with them.
Yeah.
And I couldn't. I was just like, yeah, you guys are, you're good at this? ? Yeah. We got, like, when me and Mitch were watching the game, we were both like really laid back. There were people around us that were like nervous energy and
that was me again.
And I was just like, beer in hand, set up the raffle, just done it. I was quite happy with that. Sit down, watch the football and watch the Seahawks win. I think I had like 5 minutes of, oh God, please don't let this be a repeat of the last one. And then within 5 minutes, that was gone.
Yeah. I know the situation that you're talking about, and we're going to talk about it again. Yeah, I was like, I I was feeling confident because I went on the German radio before the game, a couple of days before the game, and I actually predicted a 31-10. So I wasn't that off as well. But in the back of my mind, I probably watched too many like other podcasts before the game, like information overload, and which kind of sort doubts in my mind, like you said, Milton Williams, and if they don't get the running game going, and if Sam has to throw the ball, and the defense against Drake May coming one vote shy of MVP and playing a game like that, it's just for Matt Stafford getting the MVP. Like, imagine if Drake May got the MVP for a game like that. So
I imagine if Drake May got the MVP and then we absolutely destroyed him in the Super Bowl. I'd be like, here's your award. We'll take the bigger award. Thanks.
Yeah, just like Mike McDonald did on the parade stage. Like he was saying, okay, yeah, Coach Rabel got the Coach of the Year, but
I'll take the Lombardi.
Grabbing the Lombardi and saying, yeah, but I'll take this one instead. So total agreement there, Mike. So it was just awesome to see. You alluded a bit to it. How did you watch the game? And were you able to catch everything?
Well, I caught everything. Mitch missed his boy's touchdown, but I'll let him talk about that.
I heard the story and I want to hear it again.
So we hosted the UK Seahawkers official watch party with 12 Talk at O'Neill's Broad Street in Birmingham. We had something like 50-odd, 60 UK Seahawkers and just UK Seahawks fans from sort of around England come and sort of meet with us. It was amazing. We did a charity raffle for a nominated charity, the Roman Cancer Trust. We raised over £700. We all got to watch it surrounded by purely Seahawks fans. There was no one else in that room. We had
no Patriots fans there.
We had that many people that were due to go into the main bar that they opened up a private room upstairs for us with the big screens and everything. It was absolutely amazing. It was so, so good. And I got to sit and watch the Super Bowl with my podcasting partner in crime, Mitch.
And that's me.
And I sit on the new UK Seahawkers charity celebrity, Bumbag Mark.
Bumbag Mark.
I actually didn't catch that. Like, what's on? Right. What's on about that?
So Mark is one of my best friends, and I've been slowly converting him into being a Seahawks fan for years. And he said to me earlier,
"Good lad,
like, how are we doing?" And I said, "Look, we've got a really good chance to make it far in the playoffs." He said, "If we make the Super Bowl, I'll come and watch it with you." I was like, "Awesome." And when he came, so I drove there and back. I was like, you're doing jobs for me whilst we're going there. And he brought a bum bag, like a fanny pack. And when we got in there, my idea was I was going to go around and do the raffle thing, but I was buzzing around and everything else. I went, Mark, you're on raffle ticket duty. So he strapped on his trusty bum bag, took the raffle tickets, and went and sort of cajoled absolutely everyone into giving money for a raffle. And later on in the night, people were going, oh, so you do the podcast, you do 12 Talk. Where'd you come from? Who'd you come with? I said, oh, I came from Essex, drove my friend with me. They're like, which one? I said, oh, you know the guy who's collecting all the raffle tickets? And they all went, oh, Bumbag Mark. And I was like, yeah. And it wasn't just one person that said it. There was about eight people that said it to me. So he's now Bumbag Mark. And he's going to he's buying himself a Seahawks bum bag for our UK Seahawkers meetup.
Awesome. Yeah. Speaking of that, I think I'm going to be there.
Yes, you are.
I'm gonna take over Mitch's duties a bit, probably, because Mitch has a good reason not to be there. And But speaking of not being there, Mitch, I heard about it that you might have missed your boys' touchdown in the Super Bowl. What happened there?
Well, as we all know, there are many TV timeouts in Super Bowls, and
lot of commercials. Good commercials, actually.
Yeah. But all the same, an opportunity to go outside and have a vape, which I have actually quit doing, but for the sake of the Super Bowl and the social event and, you know, getting a break from the hot, stuffy room, I thought it would be nice to go outside and have a few vapes. Did not think that while out on a TV timeout, that the very next play would be AJ Barner's touchdown, a player that I have an affinity with personally because I predicted he would become a Seahawk during the draft process, and have loved seeing his development. So to have missed his maiden touchdown in a Super Bowl was excruciating. However, in that moment, watching it through a pane of glass as it was being displayed on the screen inside the pub, looking in like a poor person into a wealthy person's firelit home, I was looking through the glass and began to scream down Birmingham Broad Street, shouting at the top of my lungs, scaring the life out of some passers-by at 3 a.m.
Nice.
And scaring two paramedics helping someone out of a bar that was obviously worse for wear. So I did it the justice of celebrating it, probably the loudest anyone's ever screamed in Birmingham, which for a location in the UK that has a high violence rate is probably quite a lot to state. But yes, a scream down Birmingham. I missed my boy's touchdown, at least missed it in the capacity I would have liked to have celebrated it with the UK Seahawkers and my podcast partner in crime, Josh. But yeah, AJ, if you're watching, and I'm sure you listen, I've let you down.
But speaking of letting us down, he didn't let us down with his parade attire. I loved it.
He looked like, I don't know if anyone can remember Macklemore Thrift Shop.
Yep.
So in Thrift Shop, Macklemore has that fur coat, with the sleeves that are too short, and that is exactly what AJ Barner had on.
Yeah,
and that's the first thing I spotted. I was like, Macklemore, do you want to go thrift shopping? I was like, what? Yes, what a guy.
Yeah, awesome. I don't know. Have you seen the interview with the Kelseys afterwards?
Yes.
I think he actually told a hilarious story about him cracking his skull basically at the Jacksonville game and then having his most yardage in the season. And I think he's like, is he becoming a bit of a like Travis Kelce-ish, like with this touchdown? Is he going to get more national attention, like with this? Yeah, he's just very, very likable, and the football nation is getting to know him. Do you think he's going to be like, I wouldn't say a star, but like a well-known person, like other people from other fan bases can relate to and say, oh, he's a Seahawk, I like him?
I think so. I think you, as you say, he's a likable character. And if you watched his interviews with the Seahawks when he was drafted, the way he comes across is highly confident, but also a massive team player and highly motivated. And when you put those things together, someone who's going to graft for the team, do what's needed, has the motivation to improve his game, and also has confidence within himself to do whatever his coaches ask him to do, I think that is a really potent combination. And also he carried himself with that demeanor like a really good locker room guy as well. So I think he'll always be a player's player for sure. He'll also be a coach's favorite and a highly coachable player because of his own self-motivation. But I think, yes, I think other teams would covet having a player like him because of that personality and now having performed at the toughest stage. Yeah. So yeah, I think he'll be not necessarily a household name, but certainly a player that other franchises look at with envy.
I think there'll be a cult hero status at some point with him if he carries on doing what he's doing. You think you've got him, you've got Robbie Utes, you know, K9, Charbonnet. I think you've got, like, you look at Torrey Horton, could quite easily get that. Eamon Worry, all throughout this team, there's going to be cult heroes. And AJ Barner, I think with his personality, might just be top of the pile.
Riley Mills.
Oh.
That sack was just like...
brutality. He just walked that left guard back into Drake May. And whilst he was still holding the left guard, decided to grab Drake May. It was like he was walking him back and went, oh, I'm there already. Hang on, I'll just use this hand to drag the quarterback down as well. What a play.
Well, the best thing about that Riley Mills sack and the way in which he got it was that's put offensive lines on notice next year. Like, okay, he's got that in his locker. He's that powerful. He can walk O-linemen backwards. They then have to adjust how they set to stop that. If he's got other weapons in his arsenal, if he can beat you in a different way and you have to brace for that impact, he is already setting up O-linemen to, you know, for embarrassment next year.
Yeah, it's just awesome to see. Like, if we're gonna look ahead and at the end of the pod where the Seahawks have to improve, it's like having this, like, these young guys in the interior of the D-line with Riley Mills and Byron Murphy. It's like really, really good to see. And also, speaking of funny things, have you seen the mic'd up afterwards where big Riley Mills was sitting on the smallest of Gatorade coolers? Like, you didn't even see him there. And yeah, I don't know who it was.
The rookie sits over there.
Yeah. On the mic'd up, as, like, I think, was it Leo or something, like, saying, oh, the biggest guy on the team sitting on the littlest of coolers.
So good.
Yeah. And it's, I'm seeing it afterwards, his arms are like huge. It's ginormous. It's
a big boy.
Yeah. So, going back to the game, I alluded to it a bit. I was pretty anxious because I suffered defeats before, painful defeats. So, speaking about, like, when did you know the game was safe? For me personally, it was after the Patriots used like a minute or two to get this Mac Hollins touchdown, and I was like, I've seen this one play out before, so I wasn't really sure about it. But for me, it was like, okay, after Chenna got this pick six, I was like, okay, I'm done. This thing is safe. You both were very confident, but did you feel the same, or have you had another point in the game where you were thinking like, oh, okay, this one's done?
As I know what Mitch's was, and it's very much along the same line as yours. Mine was the Julian Love interception. I thought as soon as J Love got that ball, it proved what I've been saying for the last sort of 5-10 minutes about Drake May panicking in the pocket, not having time to throw, making incorrect reads and not being as accurate as he needed to be. And that was it was an example of how much he was rushed and his inaccuracy, because he did not throw that ball into the path of the receiver. He threw it wildly into where he thought he could have been in the vicinity.
Yep.
And Love picked it perfectly. And you hear in the mic'd up afterwards as well that
Love, I love it. Yeah.
Love was watching what Drake May did. He said he's a typical young quarterback. You know, he holds the ball, gives it a couple of taps before he throws it. So he wasn't just watching, you know, the receivers and the routes they were running. He had his eyes on Drake May all the way through and could telegraph when that ball was coming out and sort of triangulate as to where the receiver was going and the ball was coming, so he could just sit there and take it straight in the stomach. It was that was it for me. At that point, I thought that's going to be demoralizing now.
Yeah, mate.
For me, it was Michael Dixon's first kick downed in the five.
We changed it.
Because, and the reason I say that is they didn't get much going on offense. They didn't have any fluidity. They didn't have continuity with, you know, there was a lot of third, you know, three and outs. And you looked at that first sort of six or seven, offensive possessions that they had. And it was like three downs, punt. You looked at that. As soon as Michael Dixon started pinning them back in their own five, they had to improve so much on what they'd done so far, which was poor, to be able to get that 85 yards, 95 yards every time. And I thought, if Michael Dixon is going to do that to you all game and make life that difficult, good luck against this defense marching that ball down the field. The only thing they can do then is try the deep shots and Hail Marys, and that might work for you. It will also get you caught out. I just felt like as soon as the kicking game had aligned with the running game and the defense, I just thought, that is lights out football.
Yeah, but it was like a, bit of a, it took the whole season, like put it into one game. Like you had a dominating defense, you had really good special teams, and you had an offense who was there when called upon. So I think that was a really good, like, getting all together in one game what this season was for the Hawks. So yeah, really, really happy that it worked out and that we all can enjoy it probably as long as we are Seahawks fans, but at least until the start of the season. Not gonna be sure what's happening there, but yeah. Speaking of being happy, have you got a player who you're particularly happy for that he was able to call him, or he is now able to call himself a Super Bowl champion?
Yes, and if you thought Michael Dixon was a left field choice for the last one, this one's gonna blow your socks off. Are you ready? Quandre Diggs. Watching him partying in the locker room with the team. A player who had been bleeding blue and green when he was on our roster in his own right, and a player earning big money, relied upon as a leader in this defense.
Yeah.
He was... all over social media, banging the drum, trying to get free agents through the door. You know, he was secret agent Quandre Diggs, and I absolutely loved it. So the fact that he had made it to our practice squad, had been elevated on game day, and was in the locker room celebrating a Super Bowl win with a franchise he'd poured his heart out for, was a really, really heartwarming thing to see.
Definitely. Yeah. Shaquille Griffin as well is like pretty much an OG Seahawk. But Josh, you were trying to take a word in here.
I found it very hard to pick one because there are multiple vets on this team that deserve to be at the pinnacle of the sport. And I'm not going to just go for low-hanging fruit here, because it'd be quite easy to spin the whole Sam Darnold story, but everyone knows that. I'm going to go for Tank Lawrence. Tank Lawrence, a man who was drafted to the Cowboys, made his home in Dallas, was, you know, happy to be a Cowboy for life, knowing that he's not going to win anything there, stuck it out through thick and thin. And then, as we've said on our pod, was jettisoned because he was too old. And obviously, Jerry Jones knows loads about edge rushers. That's why he trades away one and, you know, releases the other one. And I think Tank Lawrence came into this team and he's just been absolutely fantastic for everyone. He's been brilliant for the rookies. He's been brilliant for the team in general. I just think he deserved this. And for how well he's played as well this year, he deserved it.
Yeah, it would be, or is it, he's my choice as well. I said it with when we had Bryce on. I asked him the same question, and he actually said Quandre Diggs. So, he's in the same boat as Mitch, and I'm in the same boat as Josh. It's like, yeah, so lovely to see it for D-Law, like you already said. The one thing I still find really funny, like he spoke it into existence with Brian Emhauser when he signed in Seattle and said, I'm never going to win a championship in Dallas. That's what I came here. And it was very cocky because you didn't really know, like, is this whole thing going to work out? Is he going to stay healthy? But like looking in the rearview mirror now, it's just, yeah, foreshadowing is at its best. So yeah,
it's also a matter of you can be as loyal and faithful to a team as possible as a player or a supporter, but you know you're never going to get further than a certain point. Think about Browns fans. Do you think Browns fans go into every season going, we're going to win a Super Bowl? No, they're not. They're resigned to their misery, but they still love the team. DeMarcus Lawrence loved the Cowboys, made his home there, but was resigned to the misery of the fact, I'm never going to win a Super Bowl here.
Yeah.
So he moved on, had his word with Micah Parsons over Twitter, and lo and behold.
Yeah. He told you. He told all of us. Yeah, if we're going to look ahead a bit, it's like, We all know the NFL is a copycat league, and teams are trying to like emulate the thing that was successful there. Players are already talking about, we're gonna run it back. You think that it is possible for the Seahawks to repeat this kind of success, or are there people like Sean McVay now who already figured out the recipe and can work against it?
Yeah, I think what Mike McDonald and John Schneider, or probably more John Schneider, honestly, what he's done with his roster building, his recruitment, the way he's drafted, you know, you look at these things, he's gone back to what he used to do when he was drafting, and he's going for value picks at the position rather than reaching for positions of need. And he's done that so consistently now that he's got depth at every position. If you're constantly reaching for player solutions at specific positions in the draft and they don't hit, you then have to panic react again in free agency or trades, and you end up snookering yourself because you're doing things out of desperation. The way he's accrued players in free agency, and this is where I think the league should be on notice, is they drafted, like I've just explained, they got a really young roster, and then they picked up veterans that could lead the locker room that had not won anything. They weren't there for a paycheck. They hadn't gone to the Jags because the Jags were offering $5 million more than anyone else, or the Browns, or whoever else. They came to a roster where they thought they could contend, like you've explained with Tank Lawrence, saying wasn't going to get a Super Bowl or a championship in Dallas. He believed he could in Seattle. That's the first thing. John Schneider knew he was picking a player that wanted a Super Bowl ring for his legacy. Those things are repeatable for us. I think the rest of the league should be taking note and saying, if we're going to pay a guy, I want to pay a guy who wants to do it for himself, and as well as our team, as well as for the fans, and not just for the paycheck. That, I think, is really repeatable. The draft, the free agency, and what makes it super repeatable is we've still got Mike Mack, who I now truly believe is the best defensive mind in the NFL.
Yeah,
totally agree.
Couldn't agree more. I think it's repeatable by the fact that you look at how many players on this roster are under contract for next year. I know we're going to talk about some of our free agents in a bit, but you look at the coaching staff, whilst been a turnover in some positions, I think Mac's philosophy remains the same. I think the signing of the new OC, he seems to be very much someone cut from the same cloth as Mike McDonald. You know, from that Shanahan tree, he was tight ends and you know, run game coordinator, absolutely perfect. And I think he's just going to now really push on because he knows what his identity of this team is. He knows what success is. He knows what players he's got. And we've got, what, 75 million in cap space? A lot of that's going to go into signing some free agents and people that we deem as sort of, you know, indispensable. But then there's going to be money left over to improve on positions where there may have been a perceived weakness this year. I think it's definitely repeatable. With the culture he's built within 2 years, with the buy-in he's got from the players, with the fact that Seattle is now going to be a destination for free agents that want to challenge for a chip, it's 100% repeatable.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. And it's also, you mentioned the roster. Like before the season started, a lot of people, including me, and yeah, a lot of others were saying, yeah, I don't know. Is like we were confident in the team, but I think we underestimated a bit like the qualities of the players we have. Like what did the rest of the league get wrong about the Seahawks? What did we get wrong about the Seahawks? Because really funny thing actually, before the Super Bowl, one of our guys from the German Seahawkers did a surprise pod episode with all of our worst off-season takes on the Seahawks, and having to listen to it just before the Super Bowl, and like knowing how we got there and the horrible takes we had, like there are allegedly no blue chippers on this team and stuff like that. Where do the Seahawks now have blue chip talent? Like looking at Imran Warrior, looking at Byron Murphy, who was like had a fumble recovery and one or two sacks in the Super Bowl, two I think. So he had 9 sacks this season, and he didn't make the Pro Bowl and he didn't make All Pro. So he sent a big fat FU to all the voters in the Super Bowl.
Because they can't select too many Seahawks for the Pro Bowl, that's why.
Yeah, exactly. So are there a couple of new blue chippers now on this team, you think?
100%. I mean, you don't even have to look at the draft that's just been. You look at JSN, you look at Spoon, you look at, like you said, Murphy, you've got Imran Wari as well. I genuinely think Gray Zabel is a blue chip talent. He has been absolutely outstanding this year. And I know whoever people think should be the Seahawks Rookie of the Year is a tough. Everyone leans towards Imran Wari, but I am very much in the Gray Zabel camp because he has transformed that O-line. Just having him in there and not the turnstile that was Laken Tomlinson has been, it's helped us with our running game no end. There's blue chip talent all over. You know, Derek Hall's going to come into his own. I'm hoping if we get another good edge rusher, and I rate him anyway. But I think there's players everywhere, literally all over this team.
Absolutely,
Ernest Jones as well.
Yeah, and that's just the defensive side of the ball. If we look at. Gray Zabel isn't obviously
a defensive player.
He's an offensive
player.
JSN.
And
Ken. Ken Walker? Like everybody's talking about Ken Walker now. If you look at the videos posted on YouTube after the Super Bowl, like the biggest free agents going into the off season, like nobody was mentioning Ken Walker before the Super Bowl, and now he's like in every possible thumbnail. So I don't know if he's a blue chip player, but he's gonna be really really important. We talked about it a bit, or we brushed on him a bit. It's like obviously Mike McDonald. Like, is there the discussion of who's more disappointed now after the Seahawks won the Super Bowl? Is it the Patriots who lost it? Is it the Jets fans who actually now see Sam Darnold winning a Super Bowl, or is it the Baltimore Ravens who just lost John Harbaugh and missed out on Mike McDonald? He's one of the main reasons the team got here. But what do you think, like going from year one to year two, what did Mike do to get this team over the edge?
I think what Mike's done extremely well is find very different ways to win with his defense. The way everything looks, the way it comes at you. You know, there are certain things at times that you think you know about this Seattle defense, or only rushing four, not really blitzing very much, you know, sticky coverage, and there are things that you expect to see. But when he does decide to mix it up, the team are so well drilled on those mix-ups that there really isn't a downturn in quality or execution when they are doing something they've not done very much. So you have these sort of levers to pull based on your matchup that are so highly polished that, you know, there is just no drop-off in quality. And I think what we really saw was Drake May struggling with DB blitzes, and we haven't seen many of those this year. They've been mixed in certain games and matchups, but he had no answer to uncovered DBs shooting gaps, and it wreaked havoc. So what I to break it down, what I think Mike McDonald did extremely well to get us across the line in the Super Bowl was not to be afraid to do things differently and in disguise to what had worked for us this year, so that what the Patriots faced was not what they game planned for.
And I'm just going to add to that and say, I think what he's done incredibly well over these last 2 years is build a new culture and get complete buy-in from the players. Every single player has said that this team is like a brotherhood. It's like the closest team they've ever played. And that goes from the players to the coaching, to the front office, to the tea lady. And I think that has been the biggest thing, where Mike McDonald has come in. He's had a vision for what he wants a football team to be, and he's created that culture. He's stuck to his guns, and it's paid the ultimate dividends in this sport. I think that's another thing that's going to keep people here or want them to come back or draw more people in as well.
Yeah. And like you said, I'm totally agreeing. Like, there's actually, you don't really have the thing in your mind, like, okay, is it all Mike can give? Like, if you think about it, like like Mitch, you said, like the DB blitzes and bringing out Spoon, he didn't do this during the season a lot. So you always have in your back of your mind, okay, he's not done. He's got tricks up his sleeve as well. He can evolve his game plan, and that's really scary for the rest of the league, and really good for us Seahawks fans. Before we do a look ahead, we can do, or we have to do, a bit of advertising for our own course, our own pod. So before I forget, I'll do this.
Wenn du unseren Podcast unterstützen willst, dann bewerte ihn in deinem Podcast-Player oder kommentiere unsere Folge. Du kannst uns auch direkt anschreiben per Mail an podcast@germanseahawkers.com.
You guys know it. You in the podcast community, you have to get the engagements up. So we created this little jingle to get the people liking a podcast, subscribing and stuff like that. You'll know the game.
I hit a button and I just ask people to like and subscribe. We're not as lazy as you, obviously, or we're not as forward thinking as you, but we've got something recorded. I have to remember to say it on every episode.
That's why
lazy was probably the wrong word. It's probably more forward.
No offense taken. That's why we did it, to like create the jingle so we don't have to say it in the episode all the time. But the thing about it now is, like, we have our little soundboard here, and there's like all the jingles there, and it's right in the back corner. So you
don't look at those.
Exactly, like, it's there to not miss it, to talk about it, but you tend to miss it because it's just over there, and you, like, I had multiple episodes where it was afterwards I'm thinking, damn it, I forgot about the stupid jingle. So I feel your pain. Yeah, looking ahead, like the we talked about it, the Seahawks are set up for success, which I find quite remarkable. Like the Seahawks have about $60 million of effective cap space going into the 2026 season. It's the second most among 2025 playoff teams. The Chargers have $83 million of cap space. So if you look at that, like they won
all that on an O-line.
Yeah, probably. who doesn't get injured? And so that's really good. The Seahawks have about only $600K in debt money, and they can say we talked about it. They can save about $57 million in restructures. I don't know. You have it on who they can save it on if they do a restructure.
Jason Myers, Leonard Williams, I think are the two obvious ones that have still got plenty to give, but can carry on for a number of years and are on high cap hits. So anytime you have that situation where you think the player is worthy of a few more years based on how well they are, you know, the level of fitness and productivity, and also a high cap hit that season, they become a very obvious target. So I think Leonard Williams, Jason Myers, obvious ones. Did Lucas already sign? I think he did, right?
He did
sign that extension. Yeah.
Yeah. So not Abe Lucas, but yeah, I think that's the key thing there is identifying who you want to keep on the roster for the next two or three years. Have a look at their cap hit and spread some money around. And there's a lot of candidates actually on the roster.
Totally. I'm gonna play a little game now. Speaking about our free agents, which I called stay, leave, or retire. So I got a list here, and I'm gonna ask you what's about to happen with those players. Justice is really happy about it, like because his favorite two players are coming up right at the start. So the first one is obvious. It's like Rick Woolen. Staying or leaving?
Don't all look leave. He's gonna be signed by another team who will offer him CB1 money, and that will be someone like the Tennessee Titans or Vegas.
Mitch,
he's gonna go. He's gonna go. So it was leave, wasn't it? Your option was leave.
Yeah, leave.
So
yeah, stay or leave.
He's leaving. I think there will be teams around the league that will like what he brings and are happy to ignore the warts that come with Rick Woolen. He'll be leaving.
Yeah. I'm
well, you know he's going to play all this back after free agency, and it's going to be those mixtapes of how wrong we got it all, Mitch.
Yeah. That's the thing about the internet. Like you gotta keep receipts. It's like looking at all this horrible off-season takes about the Seahawks before the season. Like that, people were saying like that they're a 4-12 team, 4-13 team. They're gonna become last in the NFC West behind the losing Cardinals and stuff like that. We all kept those receipts, but it can be flipped. So I think it's a pretty good take that Rick is leaving. Another Josh favorite is Ken Walker, obviously staying or leaving. Josh,
retire. do you know after his? After the way he proved himself in the playoffs, not being backed by committee, having the MVP of the Super Bowl, showing that consistency that I was so desperate to see all season, I see him as a priority, especially with Zach Charbonnet being out for who knows how long with an ACL, with George Halani not being the running threat that we think and, you know, Kenny McIntosh always being injured. I think he's going to be a priority. because you can always take a swing on, you know, a running back in the draft. But when you know you've got a 1-2 punch in K9 and Charbonnet that works, why take that risk?
Yep.
Yeah, I think Ken's coming back. I know a lot's being made of the fact we didn't put any kind of tag on him. But I don't think the tag was the best option for the player, wasn't the best option for the team. I know that means he's going to be able to test the free market, you know, the open market. But actually, I think that they've treated him with a lot of respect, and that will go a long way when we come to offering him the opportunity to push for another Super Bowl with this team. So I think there's a relatively team-friendly deal coming for Ken Walker when compared with what he'll be offered elsewhere. So I think he stays.
Agreed there. I sent you over a list earlier or yesterday with all the players we're going to talk about, so you can prepare yourselves a bit. One player I forgot was Rashid Shaheed, staying or leaving.
You did. I had him on my list to say, stay. He's too much of a special teams weapon. He is that field stretching wide receiver that we need. We brought him in, gave away draft capital for him midway through the season. They've obviously got a plan for him, and I think he strikes me as a player that's not in it for the Benjamins, all about the money. I think he wants to be in a good culture, in a winning culture, and challenge for Super Bowl. I think he's staying, and it'll be more team-friendly than people envisage.
I agree with that completely.
Yeah, me too. Another one? Kobe Bryant, another fan favorites of Josh. I don't think we have to explain the history there. So my simple question, staying or leaving?
For those who don't know, it's not that I'm not a Kobe Bryant fan. I said that when he got drafted, he'd never be an NFL caliber cornerback because he's not quick enough. Never said anything about his ball skills, his mentality or how hard he hits. Just not quick enough to be an elite CB. He's leaving. He's going to get top of the market safety money somewhere else, I think.
Really?
Yeah.
That's bold. I think Kobe returns. And the reason I think he returns is that they don't want Iman Wari playing a pure safety role. If you lose Kobe Bryant, you then have to recruit another safety.
Or just play Tyre Carter.
Hold on.
We'll come to Tyre Carter.
Okay, cool.
In fact, I believe he's next on the list, so maybe we segue straight into Tyre Carter.
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah, but I'm with Josh and looking at Tyre Carter. I think Kobe Bryant is because he's an unrestricted free agent. He's free to negotiate with any team, and the Seahawks can't just match the offer and get him. So if there's a team who is prepared to pay him the big bucks, there's nothing the Seahawks can do about it. So he's probably going to the highest bidder. But speaking of Tyre Carter, staying or leaving?
Exclusive rights free agent, he's staying. And he will be taking Kobe Bryant's place in that starting rotation.
Yeah. Mitch?
I can see that. It's a means to save money, right? If you let Kobe walk and you put Tyre Carter in there, you're potentially saving $8 million on the cap. That is an extremely tempting way to free up money for another position or potentially pick up another veteran for that safety room. I take the point. Tyre Carter will be staying. I agree with that. Whether it's in place of Kobe is yet to be seen, but I see the benefit.
Yeah. We're getting deep into the secondary now because I can see there's a trend towards the last question I'm going to have for you. Josh Jobe, staying or leaving?
Josh Jobe was restricted free agent, not, or was he?
He's
unrestricted. Yeah.
Unrestricted. Okay. So it's Thomas that's restricted free agent, right?
Yeah.
And I knew there was the three of those were one of each designation.
Yeah.
Yeah. This one's a difficult one because he's proven himself to be highly capable. won't command huge money, will get the option to go wherever. However, I think when you have multiple options and one of them is staying where you live with a Super Bowl contender for the year, I don't think there'll be that much variation in what he's offered. I think there's a good case to keep Josh Job instead of having to draft early in this year's draft for a corner or pay over the odds.
Josh?
Stay. He's a Mike Mack corner. He's physical. He's sticky. He does his job very well. He doesn't have to be cornerback one because that's going to be Witherspoon's job. I think he stays.
Yep. I think so too, because if you let him go, like, there's a giant hole on the cornerback position.
It'd just be with DJ Reed.
Yeah.
Let him go and he'd excel somewhere else and that'd kill me.
Yeah. Totally with you there. One we can probably agree all on is Boye Mafe staying or leaving.
Leave. And not because he's not a very good player. I think it's just not a scheme fit with what we're doing on our D-line and with what we're doing with our linebackers. There's just not a regular opportunity for him to thrive anymore.
Yeah, I think so. He's just the money he's gonna command. Like if you... I don't know who it was. I think was it Brian Nemhauser on Hawk Blogger who said, like, looking at the first class pass rushers who signed deals last year, like George Karlaftis in Kansas City and Greg Rousseau in Buffalo. I think Boye can get this kind of money, and I don't think the Seahawks are gonna pay it for the role he's supposedly playing. So I think he's leaving as well. Speaking of restricted free agents, or a restricted free agent, Drake Thomas.
Oh, you smashed that like button, and that right there is a keep.
Yeah,
he's going definitely nowhere. They're not gonna let him walk out of that building the way he played this season.
Completely agree.
Totally agree as well. And another one I find interesting because he proved his value, like even in the playoffs or when it was time to get into the playoffs. Josh Jones, stay or leave?
It's an easy stay.
Oh, do you think I've got leave? Because I think there might be a swing tackle already on the roster and one of the young players like Kite.
Okay. I think the role he played, he played really solidly in the absence of Charles Cross, obviously, when he got injured. I think he stays as well. And now we're getting into not staying or leaving, but staying or retiring. Staying or retiring, Leo Williams.
Stay.
Sorry?
Stay.
Yeah.
It's going to be, you're going to get the same answer from me from all three of these.
Okay.
And I'll preface this so I've not got to repeat myself three times. I think that they're all going to stay because they've finally reached somewhere that they can call home that has success. And whether they are an older player or not, they're still getting paid. If they see a diminished role, fantastic, because they're still paying, they're still getting paid for that. And it just allows them to coach up these young players. I don't think that Mike McDonald will see the benefit of letting these older players leave because he's essentially got a player and a coach for one pay packet.
Yep.
So the next three, I'm just going to say stay. So
absolutely.
They can just forward these to Mitch. There you go.
Yeah. Yeah, but before Mitch gets to take his shot, the players we're talking about is obviously Leo Williams, D-Law, DeMarcus Lawrence, and Cooper Kupp. Like Leo, which had me a bit of nervous. Like he posted before the Super Bowl, he posted like with pictures of him like one last ride. It was like is he talking about the last game of the season or is he talking about it? But he made it clear on the parade that he'll be back. And Yeah, Cooper Kupp's salary became vested last Friday. 9 million of his salary is already talking about going into OTA. So I think he's staying. And D-Law has 2 years left on his deal. So yeah, I'm with you there. Mitch, what do you think about those three?
Well, in the case of Leo and D-Law, why on earth would you retire when you finally started winning football games?
Championships.
Well, no, just football, James. If you've been playing for the Giants for all those years, you know, yeah. start winning games.
And the Giants.
Ugh. Yeah, what a combo.
Yeah, crikey.
What a combo. Yeah, so I think there'll be some hunger there to really cash in on not just the opportunity of a restructured contract and an extension in Leo's case, but I think just more so in D-Law's case, just start really achieving what your talent has always been capable of in the twilight of your career and see how far you can take that ride. When it comes to Cooper Kupp, I think similar, but not finally winning games, actually being fit for a full season. Why would you limp through 4 or 5 seasons where you couldn't play more than 4 or 5 games, suddenly get fit, win something, and then call it a day there?
And be at home. He's at home.
Yeah.
He's back in Washington State. He gets to raise his children but near his family. He's playing for the team he supported as a kid. Like, why would you just retire after that one? You'd be like, you know what? Let's run it back. I'm living in my home state. I'm getting paid a ridiculous $9 million at least this year. Yep. You know, and if my touches of the ball go down because of the emergence of Rashid, Torrey Horton, and if we draft someone else, so be it. You know, yep. I'm going to help my boyhood club get back to the pinnacle of the sport.
Yeah,
and the Super Bowl again. You just wouldn't do it, would you?
Totally. He's a Washington guy. I think a lot of people were skeptical about him going into the season, but because he came from the Rams, but the way he carried himself and the things you hear from the team, like he's going into QB meetings and he's going into wide receiver meetings or even safety meetings, like. Mm-hmm. Talking with the safeties about running routes and basically explaining how the routes are going to be run and how to best cover them is just like so valuable, even if the numbers aren't there. So I'm a big Cooper Kupp fan, and yeah, really happy that he's here. We talked about those free agents, upcoming free agents, and what's probably going to happen with them. But the Seahawks have a great roster. But yeah, looking ahead, do you think there are still spots where the Seahawks have to improve their roster? Like we talked about the amount of cap space they have, and obviously the profile of the Seahawks have been raised for notable free agents to come in. So yeah, first of all, where do you think I know Mitch is the draft expert, and I don't know how deep he's into his stuff. I think we're going to talk about it in the coming weeks, but yeah, where do you think, like, Mitch, the Seahawks have to improve their roster either through probably splash moves in free agency or the draft? Where do you think the whole thing is going?
Well, I think the interior O-line needs a little bit more talent so that there's competition for Bradford. I'm not a Bradford out camp right now. I think the performance in the Super Bowl was good. Not great,
no.
Certainly not bad. On the biggest stage and the biggest challenge of his career, where he could have wilted, he stood up and he did a passable, more than passable job. So I think the sensible thing to do is to get competition, genuine competition for Bradford, to either end up with a successor to that position or someone that gets the best out of Bradford, and then in the background that player can share snaps and eventually take over the role. I think that's the most sensible way to address the biggest area for improvement pre losing any players in trade, in free agency, and anything else. So that, I think, is a big need. I don't think they address it on day one. I think our outlook will probably be to either move back on day one or exchange our pick for a veteran, potentially an edge, potentially a corner. I think that's the area. So corner, edge, interior O-line, and I think that's possibly the way that we'll end up addressing it.
Oh, there's a reason me and you do a podcast, mate, because they're the exact positions that I've said as well.
Yeah.
I personally think the interior O-line is going to come from free agency. Look at the amount of experienced guards that are up for free agency this year, and I think they're ripe for the picking. I think that's probably where we're going to look. But I think corner and edge is something we'll probably look at the draft for, because I think a lot of our cap is going to be reserved for trying to bring back some of these players, because they're talking about signing JSN to an extension already. You know, you've got K9, you've got all these other players as well that might want more money. And to be honest, you don't have to spend all your money. This is the big misconception. Everyone said the cap's here, you have to make sure you spend it all. No, you don't. If you've got the right players, the right team, and you're still saving yourself 30 million on cap, perfect. That's just a good business model.
Yeah. It's actually really, really funny, like how the whole free agency and even the draft is coming towards the Seahawks, like making a really, really good case for the Seahawks. I think yesterday or today I listened to Dane Brugler on Brian Emhauser's podcast, and Brian asked him, like, how does the draft class stack up? Who are the strongest positions? And he actually talked about, like, edge is probably the edge class is probably the best of the bunch. And he talked about cornerbacks, like in the first 100, there are really good cornerbacks. So the Seahawks have 3 picks in the first 3 rounds and in the first 100. So they are there exactly. And obviously they have a lot of money to spend in free agency. And the profile of the Seahawks has been raised through the Super Bowl victory. Like looking at the Baltimore Ravens, like a Tyler Linderbaum, who's going to be a free agent, isn't probably out of the question. He's a center, but getting him there and maybe moving Jalen Sandell to right guard, or competing with Anthony Bradford at right guard. And another really funny story, I don't know if you picked it up during the parade, there was actually an upcoming free agent from the Ravens there at the parade who was really close with Mike Macdonald, and who really fits into the cornerback hole, the long, lengthy cornerback hole that Reek's gonna leave. And it's actually Marlon Humphrey, who was there at the Super Bowl parade. He had an Insta story. So there's signs pointing there. So yeah, I think it's really coming towards the Seahawks, and I'm really, really looking forward to it. I don't know about you guys.
I'm less expectant and more excited about this off season now. So obviously Mitch and I do a lot of draft content with Mitch.
Yeah.
And I'll freely admit Mitch does most of the work with that and just sends me player profiles to look over. But I'm excited about the draft, picking 32nd as in John Schneider's strong suit. But I genuinely think that there's a lot of movement within this draft. And even it's a matter of, like Mitch said, trading away a pick to get a player who then, because we've got the draft capital, we can extend almost instantaneously. I think in free agency as well, there's a lot to go on there. And unlike a lot of previous teams where we could have picked 7 or 8 positions to strengthen, Mitch and I have said there's 3 key positions to strengthen. And that is, for a team who's just won the Super Bowl, where usually there is this mass exodus of players, that's huge. To look to strengthen a right guard, and we've already got one that's serviceable if he stops having brain farts. Then we've got a cornerback who's going to have to take over from Reek Wallen's position, but then Job's already there, and then it depends. We've got Nehemiah Pritchard, who they're high on, who they're still coaching up as well. You've got to remember this as well. All of those previous draft picks that we've had that have been practice squad or, you know, in a rotation, they're still getting coached by this team. So they're still going to keep improving. And then Edge, Boye Mafe will go. He's not a scheme fit, but that means we can draft someone. Trey Hendrickson, you know, is a player that is now in free agency. You know, there's nothing to say we won't go after someone like that. And I would love that. I don't think we're going to get someone like Max Crosby. Sorry, Seahawks fans. I think he's going to chase some money and potential rather than someone who's a certified winner. But there's so much out there for us to get, and it's just an exciting time. I'm going to be watching and waiting for the notifications on my phone or in our Discord from bated breath.
Exactly. It's like, yeah, really looking forward to it. And speaking of looking forward, before we get out of here, you already talked about the draft stuff you got coming up. So what do you got coming up, and where can people find you before we get out of here? Maybe Mitch, you're the draft expert. What you got coming up there?
Well, we've still got to kind of map out exactly how we want to attack it, but one thing you can guarantee is that we'll make it creative and fun and engaging for our fan base, the people of our Discord, you know, the people who follow us all over our socials. So there will be plenty, you know, if you're not into the draft, you can just sample a little bit. If you're a nut for the draft like we are, you can bathe in it. There will be enough to go around. So you can come and find us at 12 Talk Pod on all social media. You can get us on Spotify. You can get us on YouTube. You can find us on X. You can join our Discord, which is always our pinned tweet. And come and join us for all of that fun off-season stuff, because I think it's going to be an absolute riot this off-season. We're so excited.
Definitely. I can attest to that because I'm part of I'm part of the German Seahawkers community, but I'm also part of the 12 Talk community. So I can really, really recommend it. And really looking forward to it, guys. Thank you so much for being on. And I know you struggle with that. So we're going to do it a bit of in a different way. We're going to end with the Go Hawks, but we're going to do it after each other. So I'm going to start and you're going to. I have to determine who's going next. So
you go second, Mitch.
Yeah. Without any further ado, again, thank you so much. Vielen Dank an alle, die zugehört haben. Wir gehen jetzt in die Offseason. Was wir jetzt so im Podcast vorhaben, wissen wir noch nicht ganz so, aber wir werden uns auf jeden Fall melden. Und in diesem Sinne verabschieden wir uns einfach mit einem Go Hawks.
Guten Abend. Go Hawks.
Vielen Dank. Go Hawks.
Touchdown, Seahawks!
Weitere Infos zu den German Seahawkers gibt's natürlich auch auf unserer Website unter germanseahawkers.com.